We hear of the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in creating, maintaining, and destroying all the universe, appearing as Nrsimhadev, ripping to pieces the terrible demon Hiranyakashipu. Rama killed so many demons. Parashuram decapitated so many kshatriyas. Now Mother Yashoda, a simple village woman who almost did a little violence, well, at least she threatened it by holding up a stick to her son, has now done an act of more power. She has tied up her son to a wooden mortar. It doesn't sound like it's an act of great power, but it is the most powerful act in the history of the world so far. We are yet to have the activities of the love of the gopis in dancing with Krishna. But this tying up of Krishna proves that love conquers power. Love conquers God. Even his power is a completely benevolent power, but her benevolence in tying him up by his love has subdued he who is the subduer of all subduers. So it's done. He's bound up. He's still crying. But she's not responding to his tears in the way that he's trying to invoke her pity, because she knows it's all crocodile tears. She has a look of achievement, look of triumph. And that's how and why she conquered Krishna. He wants to see his devotees conquer over him. In one sense, it was Krishna's triumph, because he had evoked her love to such an extent. It may be difficult to understand because we have this sentimental idea that love means just coo-cooing at each other. But her love in tying him up, in punishing him, he who is untiable, who is infinite, who Duryodhana wanted to tie up, but then he demonstrated that you can't tie him up because he is everywhere in everything. He is the universal form. She had done it. She knows him as infinite, infinitely charming, infinitely lovable. The women standing around, her friends, they're astonished. It seemed as if he had defeated her by not being allowed to be bound up, or somehow or other, what was going on? Some mystic potency by which all the ropes in the house and all the ropes in all the surrounding houses weren't enough. These ropes were enough to tie up so many cows and calves, but they couldn't tie up Krishna. But eventually she did it. So she has to go back to her duties. That's why she's tying up Krishna. She has so many other things to do in the house. So she wags a finger at Krishna's little friends who are standing around and tells them, look after him. You look after him. If somehow or other he gets free, you come and tell me. She's afraid that they are going to untie him. That's a lot of rope to untie. All the rope in so many houses. So she leaves. She leaves him alone. He's still crying. And she goes off with all the women, So Yashoda's confident now. I tied him up and he can't go anywhere. Now I can get on with my work in the house peacefully. So there Krishna is. He stops crying. No use to cry now. His crying was only to try and get his mother to untie him, but there doesn't seem to be any hope of that now. So he stops crying. It's all a show anyway. Then a look comes on his face. What mischief can I do in this situation? The whole reason why Yashoda tied him up is to stop his mischief. But he's thinking, as we learn from all these life coaches, that setbacks are opportunities. So Krishna's thinking how to make the best use of a bad bargain. So Krishna, he starts crawling ahead, which wasn't thought possible. The mortar is so heavy. But he goes along with the mortar being dragged behind. Must be making marks in the ground as he goes, and his friends cheering him up. He thinks, well, I'm not bound. I'm bound, but this is a kind of fun to go along with this mortar behind me. First, he goes slowly, then little faster, goes outside the immediate vicinity of the house, goes onto the path leading to the main village road, and there he sees those two amazing trees, which he's seen so many times previously. And those two trees are fallen demigods, and they've seen Krishna so many times. And their stems are like this. At the bottom, they're two trees, but at the bottom, they're joined together in a V shape like this. Just that's all arranged by Krishna's lila potency, knowing that Krishna will come later. Everything is orchestrated. It's all a drama. Lila means drama. So Krishna sees there's this V shape and just goes right down to the earth. And just out of the earth, they grow up next to each other, but at a slight angle. So Krishna thinks, what I'll do is I'll drag this mortar. I'll go in between the trees. The mortar will be stuck between the trees. And then the string will snap, and then I'll be free. Of course, he also knows that Nalakuvra and Manigriva are there, but he can think different things. He's going to free them, but at the same time, he's thinking in another way. It's all possible for Krishna, not possible for you and me to have two completely different ways of thinking. These are, of course, not ordinary trees in any way. They're huge trees. No one has seen such trees. What species exactly do they belong to? They're there in Vrindavan, waiting for Krishna to come on the curse of Narad Muni. When he was born, every tree and creeper and every living being in Vrindavan rejoiced. But the two fallen demigods trapped in the tree, they rejoiced in a different way, knowing that their liberation from that life was nigh. It's something like when Ramachandra Bhagavan and Lakshman entered the ashram, or they were just coming towards the ashram of Gautam Rishi. Then his wife Ahalya, who was, some people say he's there in the form of, she was there in the form of a stone, but according to Valmiki, she was just there in a disembodied form. So seeing Rama and Lakshman coming, she knows when they come, she will be delivered. So in the same way, Nalakuvra and Manigriva, they had to wait more time. They had to wait a little over 2 years for Krishna to grow up a bit and enact this pastime. So they saw him coming, dragging the mortar. They know, now it looks like we're going to be freed. Krishna's coming deliberately toward us. They don't know how they're going to be freed from this curse, but they know Krishna's going to do it. They'd been waiting day after day after day for Krishna to deliver them, enjoying watching his pastimes. They also got the opportunity to do some service. The trees in Vrindavan, they're all great rishis and munis who do service by offering shade to Krishna and his devotees, fruits, flowers, forest for them to play in. They run in and out of the trees playing hide and go seek. Somehow, so long ago, they had misbehaved in the presence of Narada, which normally they wouldn't do. They're demigods, they're elevated beings, but by the arrangement of Krishna's lila potency, they were cursed and blessed by Narad, and as trees, they never forgot who they were. They were standing, thinking of Krishna, very Krishna conscious, long, long before Krishna appeared. The boys accompanying Krishna, clapping their hands, running with Krishna, laughing. They see that Krishna's going toward the trees. They think, well, maybe he wants to get in the shade. It's the morning is coming on, the sun is rising. More and more, the day's getting hot. At this season of the year, it's not very hot in Vrindavan, but in the daytime can get quite warm. So Krishna does as he desired. He goes between the two trees and the mortar, horizontal, gets caught between them. Krishna goes forward, but the strings don't break. The trees break. The sound is so loud of the trees breaking and then falling. Huge sound, which reverberates around the whole universe. And all the inhabitants of Raja, except the cowherd boys who are right, and Krishna, and the two demigods who come out of the trees, they all become stunned, unconscious by that sound. Otherwise, everyone would have come running immediately, but they didn't. Why didn't they come immediately? Because they were all out for the count. They were all lying on the ground like the two trees. So the two demigods now have regained their forms, and they make so many prayers to Krishna. And finally they pray, Varni gunanu katane shravano katayang hastau chakarma sumanastava padayornaha Smrityang shirastava nivasa jagat praname drishti satang darshanestu bhavatanunam. Henceforward, May all our words describe your pastimes. May our ears engage in oral reception of your glories. May our hands, legs, and other senses engage in actions pleasing to you. And may our minds always think of your lotus feet. May our heads offer our obeisances to everything within this world, because all things are also your different forms. And may our eyes see the forms of Vaishnavas who are non-different from you. This is a beautiful and very relevant prayer for all of us. We can all pray to Krishna like this. They're praying to Krishna, but Krishna reminds them that this is all the mercy of Narad Muni. And what Krishna says to Nalakuvara and Manigriva is also very important and very instructive for all of us. Krishna told the two demigods who had regained their forms, he told them that the great saint Narad Muni is very merciful. By his curse, he showed the greatest favor to both of you, who are mad after material opulence and who had thus become blind. We have early in the Bhagavatam the statement, Dhana Durmadandha. People, by their wealth, they become as if blind, maddened by prestige. Ahankare Mattohaya Nitai Pada Pasarya. People who become intoxicated with their false ego, they forget Nityananda, the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. So Krishna continues, although you fell from the higher planet Swargaloka and became trees, you were most favored by him. I knew of all these incidents from the very beginning. That means that just like the two demigods in the form of trees were looking at Krishna, waiting for Krishna, Krishna was also waiting for the right time to deliver them. And he gave them more than 2 years of seeing his baby period pastimes. So that was Krishna's great favor to them. Actually, if they'd stayed in the form of trees longer, it would have been more of a benediction, that they would have seen his pastimes more. But anyway, if there's a time and place for everything, everything is arranged perfectly by Krishna and Krishna's Leela Shakti, his pastime organizing potency. Then Krishna said something very important, which we can all bear in mind. When one is face to face with the sun, there is no longer darkness for one's eyes. Right? Similarly, when one is face to face with the sadhu, a devotee, who is fully determined and surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will no longer be subject to material bondage. Krishna's emphasizing the importance of taking shelter of the devotees. He's telling Nalakuvara and Manigriva that, well, I delivered you from the bondage of being in the tree form, but the real mercy you can get from the sadhus just by coming in their association, means a topmost devotee, you'll be liberated from material existence. So Krishna told them, O Nalakuvara and Manigriva, now you may both return home. They're not fully purified. They're thinking, I want to go back to the heavenly worlds. Similarly, we had the snake who was delivered by Krishna. By Krishna touching him on the foot, he was a Vidyadhara who had taken that form, a lower demigod, Vidyadhara, and he was delivered by Krishna and he went back to his existence as a Vidyadhara. So not everyone who gets the direct mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of his being delivered by the Supreme Lord. Not all of them go back to Godhead, because not all of them desire that, even though they get the direct darshan of the Supreme Lord. But Krishna told them that, okay, you go back to the heavenly worlds, but since you desire to be always absorbed in my devotional service, your desire to develop love and affection for me will be fulfilled. And now you will never fall from that platform. So Krishna said, okay, now you go. So they go. Krishna, he's still tied up to the mortar. And although his mother has gone away from the scene just now, he's still tied up by the bonds of the love of his mother. He's playing as if he's very proud. See, I can, even though I'm tied up, I can still do mischief. I'm tied up, but I'm still on top of things. But the real pride he has is how much my mother loves me. He's tied up, but the demigods who are tied up or bound in the form of trees, he has freed them. Now, the little boys watching all of this, they're astonished. They don't know what's going on. Demigods speaking all these high words of praise. What can they understand? Little boys, tiny little boys, hardly able to walk. In the meantime, the demigods had gone away, and just by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, everyone else in the village comes to consciousness. And what's going on? Oh, there's a tremendous sound. They were unconscious for about an hour. Now they all came running. Nanda Maharaj, Rohini with Balaram, all the women of Gokul with their children. Everyone comes running to the scene. What's going on? And they see a very unusual sight. Those two trees have fallen down. Oh, it must have been a thunderbolt, they think. And then Krishna's tied up. They wonder, what on earth is going on? Nanda, seeing Krishna tied up, he's shocked and immediately releases Krishna, unties him, takes him and strokes him lovingly, affectionately. But where is Yashoda? Yashoda is a little slow in coming. Now Krishna is enjoying his father's love for him. His father saying, but who could tie you up? Who could be so cruel as to tie you up? Who has done this deed? It must be punished. Nanda suspects that his mother has done. Who would dare to tie up Krishna except his own mother? But he also knows that Krishna is feeling distressed, or he sees Krishna is looking distressed, and he speaks to pacify Krishna. And Krishna, he looks around, sees everyone is there. He doesn't want to say it loudly so everyone can hear. So he whispers in Nanda's ears, mother tied me up. Nanda knows that Yashoda, she wouldn't do this whimsically. Definitely, no question about of spite or anger or hate. If she did anything, even tying him up, she must have done it motivated by the desire to do something good for Krishna. What happened exactly? On one hand, Krishna is tied up. On the other hand, we have these two massive trees, which are very strong and sturdy and showing no sign of decay, and now they're broken. And what happened? It seems like a thunderbolt hit and Krishna was tied up, and the thunderbolt missed Krishna, but the trees fell down, and they could have fallen on Krishna, but they didn't. What's going on? So Nanda and the others asked Krishna's little playmates what happened. And they said, well, Krishna was tied up and he drank the mortar and he didn't really wrench it, but he just went through the trees, and with a little touch of the mortar, the trees fell down, and then two astonishingly bright, shining young men came out, and the older people don't want to hear anymore. What is all this prattle? What are they talking? It's just silly talk of little boys. They don't know what's going on. They're just making it up. It's some children's game. They've imagined it. Nanda Maharaj sits down with Krishna on his knee. Then Nanda thinks, oh, what shall we do now? We have to do something purifying to protect Krishna. So he takes Krishna down to the Yamuna to bathe him there, and they call brahmanas who pronounce mantras for the protection of Krishna. And then Krishna and Balaram sit down with Nanda for their morning meal. This is all going on in the morning. Krishna was playing in the morning. It seems like it took a long time, but anyway, time in Vrindavan is stretchable. Things can take a long time, which should take a short time, and vice versa. So Krishna and Balaram sit down with Nanda Maharaj to take their meal, but Yashoda is keeping herself in the background. Yashoda's not eating. She's not talking to anyone. She's just remaining in the house, keeping busy. She's feeling so upset. How could I do that to Krishna? He almost died because of these trees falling down. She's regretting very much. In the evening, the whole day goes on like this. Yashoda, she's just wrapped in herself. In the evening, they come into the hall where everyone eats. And Krishna is still keeping very close to Nanda Maharaj. So Nanda asks him, don't you want to go to your mother? No, 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 I'll only stay with you. I'll never go to her again. She tied me up. I don't want to go. Yashoda's feeling terrible. Then Krishna's aunts, the wives of Nanda's brothers, ask him, but don't you want to drink milk from your mother's breast? Krishna said, you bring me hot milk with sugar candy. But won't you play anymore with your mother? I'll play with Father and Balaram and my friends. Nanda says, now you're showing so much affection to me and Rohini and others, not to your mother. Nanda himself all day has been feeling somewhat angry toward Yashoda. But not really angry, but just can't understand. How could she do this? But Krishna said, she tied me up, she left me alone and went away. But Rohini is trying to pacify Krishna. Why are you so hard? Your mother is suffering without you. But Krishna is hard. He looks at his father. He doesn't give any reply. Rohini, with some gestures, indicates to Balaram to go to Krishna and take Krishna and bring him. Rohini wants Balaram to bring Krishna to her. But Krishna, he won't go. He knows the next thing she'll take me to Yashoda. So with his tiny little arms, he clings onto his father's neck, crying. He's really making a big scene out of it. He looks at his father. You will protect me only. But his father knows how much he loves his mother. Actually, he loves his mother more than his father. So underneath all this rejection, he says to Krishna, okay, you want me to punish her? He raises his hand. I'll punish her. Then Krishna, with his little hands, grabs Nanda's hand. No, 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 no. No, no, no. You don't do that. Then Nanda says, you see, your mother, she's crying all day. She's not eating all day. What are you going to do? Now, Krishna, he changes. Mother, mother, where is mother? Then Rohini takes Krishna in her arms and goes to the part of the house where Yashoda is. Then Krishna just jumps out of Rohini's arms, runs to his mother, clings onto his neck, and she clasps him so tightly to her breasts. So Krishna is crying, Yashoda is crying, all the women are crying. They're still struck by, he was in such danger. The trees fell. They don't want to say it, but they know he could have been killed. She's feeling terrible, but now the mood is changing. She gives him her breast, and that breast milk, which he hasn't had since the morning, that which he cried for in the morning, that which he made such a big scene of because he couldn't get her breast milk. Now, what he couldn't get in the early morning, he gets. The love of his mother in the form of her breast milk. Then, after taking that, he sits down to eat with Rohini and all the other women all around. But Nanda is worried. All the elderly men are thinking, what's going on? So many terrible things are happening in this place. Since Krishna was born, everything's been wonderful because Krishna's here. But there we have Kamsa over there in Mathura, not very far from here. Kamsa is there with his demoniac friends. What's going on? So many demons, so many disturbances. So Nanda tells Yashoda, you always keep Krishna with you. Don't leave him alone even for a moment. He knows that little Krishna can be protected best of all by her. She was already thinking this. I'm never going to let Krishna out of my sight anymore. Of course, she does later when Krishna he insists, now I have to start herding the calves. And she was happy that he's doing that in one way, in as much as he's doing what the cowherd community do. He's growing up to be a good cowherder from an early age. In another way, she was unhappy that she won't see him during the day. And she's also afraid, but she thought, Balaram, you always have to be with Krishna. Balaram, if he can't be with me, then Krishna should always be with Balaram. One thing, Krishna made a point, he likes to play. He comes to Vrindavan to play. So he doesn't like to be tied up so that he can't play. You have to give him the freedom to play. So he's going out to the pastures with the boys and the calves. That was, in one way, an excuse so he can play all day. And then later, a little later, when he gets a little older, he starts playing with the young gopis also. So Krishna has come to Vrindavan to play. Even when tied up, he'll go on playing. But he likes the freedom to jump and dance and frolic freely. Don't try to tie him up and put him in a box of our mind and say, God can't do this, God must be like that. He's beyond the power of our tiny minds to tie him up inside our intellect. It's another lesson we can learn from this. So now the residents of Vrindavan have a new name, Damodar. He's tied up by a string around his waist. So they joyfully call him this name from time to time, just remembering this pastime, because after all, even though it seemed at the time to be painful with Krishna crying, his mother angry, and the trees falling down, very dangerous, but in retrospect, it's all bliss. And it was at the time also. Yashoda means she who gives fame. But through this pastime, Krishna manifested the greatness of Yashoda. He manifested the power of love to control even himself. That he made it known through Yashoda, she who makes glories known. He made it known through her that he fully surrenders. He who demands surrenders. Mame kam sharanam vraja. He himself submits to that mood of complete dedication to him, complete sacrifice, complete everything for his sake. Krishna manifests himself in the form of discussing such pastimes also. This is above the platform of simply wanting to know, wanting to understand. These pastimes of Krishna in his childhood, they're simply to be relished by devotees. And of course, we may draw from them so many philosophical truths, but really he's just demonstrating that above all human virtues, such as kindness, tolerance, charity, beyond severe austerities, beyond deep study of Shastra and deep knowledge of any topic, beyond everything of human achievement, is simply to love him. How great is Krishna? How great is bhakti by which Krishna is controlled? Nayang sukhapo bhagavan dehinang gopika sutaha Gyani Nang Chatma Bhuta Nam Yata Bhaktimatamiha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service, but he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or to those who consider the body the same as the self. Loving Krishna, dedicating everything for his service, is of itself. It doesn't need philosophical justification. It coexists with Krishna eternally. What is the meaning of it? It has its own meaning. What is the purpose of it? There's no why, how, what, where. Those who are on the platform of pure devotional service, they just love Krishna. It's not something for them to even think about, why it's more natural for them than breathing. At the higher level of human consciousness comes philosophy, trying to understand the meaning of life. Questions arise, is there God? If there is God, then why this, why that? But the pure devotees, they don't know why they love God. They don't have any purpose in doing so. They just do, that's all. This love for Krishna flows from the heart of the devotee. It's a reflection of Krishna's love for the devotees. What's the origin? Who can say? It goes on eternally. Krishna finds that such devotees are more dear to him than his very own self. These pastimes of Krishna with his pure devotees, the pure devotees and those who are graced by the pure devotees, they can appreciate it. For others, they cannot even begin to understand, even if they try, why this is going on. Why devotees should be so interested to hear this pastime again and again and again, the non-devotees can have no understanding of this whatsoever. It takes great mercy to, I'm saying the word understand, maybe the word appreciate is better. It takes great mercy to appreciate this. It's not really a matter of understanding logically. Those who have the mood to serve Krishna, they can find in these pastimes the acme of service. Beyond thinking, beyond motivation, just the desire to serve Krishna with pure love. No thought of how happy I will be by seeing Krishna, just serving him. And in his devotees, as Krishna pointed out to Nalakuvra and Manigriva, it's not all about me. You should better go to the devotees. See the mercy of the devotees. Narad Muni, Yashoda, simply by remembering her, we become so much purified. She is the role model of selfless love for Krishna. When a devotee sees that someone is ready to receive the seed of bhakti, bhakti lata bij, or when Krishna arranges that someone can get the beginning seed of pure devotion to Krishna. Krishna arranges. Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Sometimes the pure devotees like Narad, they give bhakti even to people who are not just not ready, but totally disqualified in every way. Narad gave to a hunter the seed of pure devotion to Krishna. The devotee is more powerful than Krishna himself. People who are disqualified by the laws of nature which work under Krishna's direction, who are totally disqualified, far, far away from the platform of being able to even begin to approach Krishna. Yeshang tantagatang pa pang jananang punya karmanam tedvanva moha nirmukta bhajante mandritavrataha. Who can be a pure devotee? Those who are free from sinful effects and from this life and previous lives, and who are not sinful, who perform pious activities, who are free from illusion, highly elevated people, they can engage, Krishna says, in my service with great determination. But pure devotees, they just knock aside. They don't consider such things. The Panchatattva came in that mood, that without considering, Patra Patra Vicharnahi Nahistanastan, Jejaha Paitare De Prema Dan. Whoever, as long as they're not gross offenders to Vaishnavas, they're willing to give pure devotion. This pure devotion, which is exemplified by Mother Yashoda. Instead of thinking, I, me, and mine, we think of Krishna, Krishna's. Everything is for Krishna. Even religion in this world, it's all about, well, what can I get from God? But we learn from Gita, from Bhagavatam. We don't belong in this world. This world is a world of forgetting Krishna. I don't belong, I'm a stranger in this world. I don't belong in this body. I'm covered by the flesh and the blood and the mind and the ego. This is all ignorance. I'm meant for love. Shrinvantu Vishve Amritasya Putra. Oh, you are meant for eternal life. You are meant for bliss. You are meant for nectar. Hear about it all. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may seem a long, long way away, but the devotees, by Krishna's desire, they come into this world, and by association with devotees, by hearing from devotees, by serving devotees, we become infected, that is the word that Srila Prabhupada would use. We become influenced by their service mood to Krishna. And if we do a little service, even in this life, then it may not fructify, but in course of time, it will fructify. Just any little association with devotees, that's for our eternal spiritual benefit. We have our freedom, little minute independence. Misusing that, we don't want to love God, serve Him, but Krishna arranges the world in such a way, He's in the heart of every living being. He arranges that at some point they can come to somehow or other have some association with devotees. That is Krishna's mercy. Begins by arranging association with devotees. So we pray to our Guru Dev, pray to Srila Prabhupada, pray to all the acharyas to give us the gift, which they always want to give, but still we have to pray for it. Pray give us the mood that you have of serving lovingly, then we can begin to appreciate such amazing pastimes as this Damodā Līlā. We can speak on it and carry that mercy so that others can also hear it. We pray to be imbued with the highest power. Not that we're going to have it to the level of Yashodā, but that highest power is the power of loving. Yashodā, she loves Krishna so much. All of her associates, they love Krishna so much. So in this month of Damodā, especially through our Sri Guru Dev, we offer respects to Yashodā, to Damodā, and to the great love that ties them together eternally, that power of love, that force of love, which is so powerful that if we somehow hear about it from the right source, we also develop a desire to develop that pure love. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyo eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo